We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to the program, 803-0930, 1-800-616-WBEN. The dueling town halls are going on tonight. Which one are you going to watch, and if you're going to watch at all? We just had breaking news that Kamala Harris has had people testing positive, multiple people that we know of have tested positive for coronavirus. Why not wear the masks, I ask? Why weren't you being safe and careful and washing hands and doing all of the things? What event were you at that was super spreading to get Kamala Harris infected? This is wholly irresponsible. Outrageous. You should be wearing masks. They're 120% effective. They're 100% effective. And then the 20% of hopefulness brings into the 120% total that I came up with. Unreal. Where did this happen? I want to track them, trace them, find out everything. I need more information.
And
she
went to a Trump rally. That's the problem.
That could have been. It could have been the fly.
The fly was carrying COVID.
You know, we're talking about Kamala Harris. There was some audio that came out yesterday. She did an interview with Rachel Maddow. Rachel Maddow. You know, there's I don't know if you noticed this with Kamala Harris, but when she doesn't want to ask a question, she goes into this weird cackle. It's like a laugh to just obstruct the question. And somewhere they polled that's charming and people like it. But really, every time there's anything that she doesn't want to talk about, she just starts laughing. Here's an example of that.
I just realized that I would kick myself if I didn't just ask you before I let you go. If you noticed the fly on Vice President Pence's head at the time during the debate, or if that was something that only we could see it at home. Could you see it sitting next to him?
She's nodding her head.
This is a legitimate question. This is going to be the Vice President of the United States.
Feelings about, like, did you have the instinct to?
You know, Rachel.
What?
I just, you know, I think that it's important that we kind of find a way, all of us, to move on. And, you know, kind of.
There was a fly in his head. I don't understand. Why is the question being asked? And why can't you just answer the question as, yeah, there was a fly in his head and it happens. It's funny. Go to the other audio of Kamala. This is earlier in the interview. She was
as mad as everybody else is that NBC is doing a town hall with President Trump tomorrow instead of the debate at the same time that Vice President Biden's going to be on ABC.
I'm not touching that.
What is happening? What is going on? What is funny? Are they high? Is she listening to Tupac in the 80s again? What is going on? You know what I loved in 1983? Nirvana.
Yeah, did you?
I was a big Nirvana fan in the early 80s. And who's your favorite living rapper? Tupac.
Tupac, yeah.
Well, maybe he's alive. You don't know.
Some people say he lives in Cuba. You know what that is? Very uncomfortable.
But I mean, I don't even, why are we laughing? Get back to that question about NBC. Maybe it's a legitimate question. I don't know. You work for NBC, Rachel Maddow. I don't know why you're throwing NBC under the bus. But the idea was they were going to have dueling town halls. And, you know, whether you like that or not, whatever. But legitimate question. What do you think about NBC hosting the town hall?
You as mad as everybody else is that NBC is doing a town hall with President Trump tomorrow instead of the debate at the same time that Vice President Biden's going to be on ABC?
I'm not touching that.
That is. Well, let me ask you a different angle.
Yeah.
Should the networks refuse to give the president other opportunities for airtime if he's the one who refuses the chance to debate?
I'm not going to tell the networks what to do, but I'll tell you, I know who I'm going to be watching.
Okay, well, hold on. That's a legitimate question. If the president is the reason why the debate has to be canceled, why should he have an opportunity to debate? Well, I would have asked the question on the Tennessee Titans that before they beat the Bills 42-16. But neither here nor there. You now have two people that we know of infected with coronavirus, Kamala Harris. So wait a minute. Is Joe Biden infected? What was the proximity that those people had to Joe Biden? Does Joe Biden have to, I mean, I don't know what more he could do. We can go to callalid.com or whatever the website is to find out when Joe Biden's called a lid. No, it literally, there's a website that has been created about the media, the times that Joe Biden calls an end to the media. And it is, let me see what this is called. Here's the website. Has Joe Biden called a lid today.com? Has Joe Biden called a lid today.com is the website you yourself can go to determine when Joe Biden has determined I'm not going to do anything more today and the media is no longer welcome. There's no message. I have nothing to say. Leave me alone. Look, what was just pick a random date, Joe. Pick a random date and tell me when the lid was called.
The picture's hilarious. All right, October 3rd, 2020.
October 3rd, 2020. When was the lid called by the Biden campaign?
9:41 a.m.
9:41 a.m. You're running for the President of the United States, and you have nothing to say to the media and nothing planned after 9:41 in the morning. Give me another day.
September 24th, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, 9:20 a.m.
The lid was called. 9:20 a.m. they called the lid. Now, what was happening last week? Give me something last week.
All right. Hold on. The website does have a few kinks in it. Let's look.
It was designed on a phone, probably on a subway train from Port Washington to New York City.
October 6th.
Literally.
Does that seem like a good date?
Yes, October 6th.
9:12 a.m.
9:12 a.m. just a week ago. So wait, if Joe, I want to know more about these COVID positive patients in the Kamala Harris camp because I want to know where they were, what event they got COVID, why they weren't wearing masks. For the love of God, that's 100%, right? It's better than a vaccination. Masks are saving the world. You tell us that every day. You should not have this happen. This came from the unwashed masses at a super spreader event. Where did these people get it? How many other people have gotten it? And why is Kamala Harris, what is her proximity with Joe Biden? Does Joe Biden now, has he been exposed to coronavirus? We need to know. That could have serious consequences, as Trump's positive test had serious consequences.
But I'll tell you this, if Joe Biden does have COVID, George Stephanopoulos could still host the town hall since George Stephanopoulos has already had COVID-19.
That's true. Thank God George Stephanopoulos was hanging out where he shouldn't have been hanging out, right? The unwashed masses without masks. What do you got to
say? You know, the thing, what I'm looking at here is all the events that we're talking about, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's COVID, who said this, who said that. It doesn't seem like anything is going to move the needle at this point. Nothing happens. Nothing that we're hearing in the news is going to have any effect on the election whatsoever Everybody has cemented in their belief.
There is nothing changes. Everyone's decided. There are no undecideds. Let's go to the only undecided person I know of is Peter in Ontario. Pete in Ontario is the only undecided person that's ever called into this program.
What, honestly, I'm on this side. I would decide just to have an America that was fair. The conservative mind is that of logic, of like A, B, C, D, not like X in the middle. Like, it's just really simple to get up in the morning and know you got to do the best thing for who's what's behind you and your parents behind you and your kids in front of you. This is really simple. I'm not a Trump lover. He's a very interesting guy. It's not about Donald Trump at this point. We know that. It's about the freedom of America. We always hear every year that this is the biggest election in American history. But this is the first election where the left has completely taken the towel off their face. And I believe when we go forward with the media, and Kayleigh McEnany getting her Twitter shut down. Okay, so this morning it should be like this. The top brass in the Republican Party should be absolutely holding their feet to the fire. Where's Lindsey Graham? Where's the strength of all this? Like, there's nothing there. There's no fighter. There's very few of a...
But are you not intrigued, however, by the fact that if there is... If Josh Hawley in the Senate decides that the Facebook Twitter thing, I really think there's legs to this story, and I think this is a serious question of what you, if you are going to stand as a platform asking for federal tax incentives and dollars and all that other stuff, but take it at the point where one, before this was a hard drive delivered to a computer store that was never collected again, this story was called a hack. This was saying that information was illegally obtained. If you go back to the Pentagon Papers, courts have determined that if it doesn't matter the means in which you receive information, your First Amendment right still pertains, and you can share that information in journalistic standards if it's newsworthy. Yet in this circumstance, anyone who shared that story not only was sanctioned, the press secretary of the United States was blocked from her platform. This wasn't from Breitbart or Alex Jones. This was from the New York Post.
It is incredible what this actual move. This was the worst that we've ever seen something like this happen. In the context of how many heads these people get out to Facebook and all that, how many they do. Now listen, we know the next 3 weeks are massive, the next 19 days. But what we need to know is between now and the weekend, what the hell are they going to legally do about this?
Well, I see that Josh Hawley's argument that this is an in-kind contribution from those corporations to the Biden campaign is a legitimate argument.
Yeah, they should absolutely. And what kind of sanction? It's too late in the game. It'll become political. You know, where's William Barr? Could you imagine how the Obama administration and left would be acting if it was on the cities would be burning right now. This would be. And you know what? There's one other thing, and I'll shut my trap, if you can believe that, is that if something like Kamala Harris, a woman like Kamala Harris gets in, even if Joe himself. I mean, all these people that are on the left that have somewhat of a 401k or any kind of investment that relies on the exchange, I don't. They're done. They're going to wave by. No country is going to want to do any kind of increase in business in the U.S. We're 34 million in Canada with the same geological space and massive natural resources. We got left-wing Trudeau. But even he's smart enough to know he'll start to draw that business in. Like, are you kidding me?
You know, there's a lot of truth to that. Pete, always appreciate you in Ontario. Let's go to Texas Terry. Texas Terry's back in his regular routine call posture. I appreciate that, Terry. What's on your mind, sir?
I want to make a point about what y'all talking about right now, but I did have one super quick story.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so you had hit the deer that time, right?
Multiple deer, yeah.
Yeah, and a caller called up and he said, if you ever come to that situation again, you got to flash your high beams.
Right.
And that'll make the deer run. And I heard that. And yesterday, I almost smashed into a deer on my way home from Oklahoma back into Texas. And I had to make a decision, hit the deer or avoid it and whatever was going to happen after that. And that call popped into my head. I flashed the high beams and the deer burnt off. And now I'm here today.
Wow. A caller to this program potentially saved Texas Terry's life. And you don't think you make a difference when you call into radio programs. Thank you, Texas Terry, for sharing that. I think in a truck, though, you would have been all right.
Well, I was in a like a Ford Transit, my work truck. But anyway, so Tony kind of killed my thunder a little bit with what he was saying. But I was going to say, you know, it really doesn't matter which town hall you watch. I mean, if you're on the fence right now about who you're voting for or what you stand for and what you're prepared to endure for the rest of the, you know, whatever lifeline that we have or longevity this country's going to have, and you don't know who you're going to vote for, and you need these town halls to help you make that decision, then I don't want to call anybody stupid, but you're definitely ill-informed and possibly ignorant. And
well, listen, I mean, that's a fair characterization. I mean, every time, you know, we played Joe Scarborough earlier, every time that they refer to Trump supporters, you know, the Hillary deplorable comment, it always comes down to this. You know, we're stupid. We're not evolved. We're better than you. Senator from Hawaii had a statement that, you know, it's difficult to communicate when you know more than the population. I mean, you're a senator in the United States Senate, and you believe that you're smarter than the people that you represent. I mean, that's really frightening. That's not what it's just, you would think that would be frowned upon when you're going for public approval and votes. Terry, always appreciate your point of view. Peter in St. Catharines, what's on your mind, Peter?
Hey, David, good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call.
It has been a very long time, Peter. I hear you've been a busy guy.
Yeah, so we can't get footed in that, David. Thank you very much.
I will definitely do that, but thank you. It's been a long time. I missed you.
So listen, I'm calling in because we raised the issue of Kamala Harris and the positive test and the face mask, etc. Two things, when it pops into my mind when we deal with liberals, they don't do anything for no reason. And because the good president went through his bout, emerged very well, there might be a possibility that they're going to use this one. God forbid that there is bad, let's say, symptoms, but there's a possibility that they're going to bleed it out and put it back into the American face that this is a very bad situation and you have bad symptoms and look at how much Kamala is suffering. They would use anything to hang it on the president and to make this worse than it is. I want to comment on face masks. I'm not going to get into it too much, but I'll just say this. I know the data and I know all of the information on face masks 100%. And this is the issue. I'm going to say it here because I know the data. Except for N95 masks, N99 masks in hospital settings, very specialized settings. The other face masks, when you look at all of the evidence in the world today, all of them, very poor studies were done so far. But when you put them together, the face masks are ineffective. And that's the goddamn honest truth. That's the data. People may not want to hear it. N95s are effective, but the other face masks are not. And you certainly don't face mask a child. There's no evidence, none whatsoever, zero, that face masks are effective in children. In fact, we know that children don't spread it to children as much. Very, very low risk. We know that children don't spread to adults. Very, very low risk. And we know that children don't even take it home. Very, very low risk. That is the science. We know that children are at risk of getting it from home. And face masks, because we know the data shows it's ineffective, it's not conclusive, we don't face mask children. Face masks have a lot of side effects. And there's a lot of data that's accumulating now. And at the end of this point that I made here, I'm just saying we as human beings and people live in a free society. We have to make common sense decisions. We need to think about this carefully. I would say today that if I were going into a high-risk situation where I don't know who the other people are, or I might be high-risk, in that case, I would seriously consider wearing a face mask. That's what I would do. I would not say not use it. But outside of, if you could effectively social distance and wash your washing hands is probably the most important thing ever.
Right.
You could only do anything. You wash your hands. Everything else you could forget about.
Peter, you know, I really wish I saw you on the screen earlier, because I'd love to talk to you more about your subject matter expertise, and especially this topic in particular. I'm short on time, but Peter, it's great to hear from you. I hope to hear from you more. I really missed you while you were away, and it'd be great to hear more from Peter in St. Catharines. I just I'm crunched for time, but brilliant, brilliant guy who really knows his stuff, and he's looked at all the numbers. He knows what he's talking about. Want to give you a quick, we're going to have Joe Daniels up for the Medal of Honor Museum coming up here. He created the 9/11 Memorial in New York. This guy is one of the most impressive people I've ever met.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
My life. My next guest is a guy I think maybe top five coolest people I've ever met in my life. Just one of those people you meet that is just, you follow him, you want to go through hell with a bucket of gasoline. He's a motivator. He's a leader. He was in charge of the National 9/11 Memorial, raised over $220 million to build that thing, and very difficult navigation, political winds, did it in 50 states and 28 countries. Now he's the CEO of the National Medal of Honor Museum in Arlington, Texas. His name is Joe Daniels, and he's already, you're going to give him applause. That's pretty cool. He's already raised $61 million for that. But what the National Medal of Honor Museum is doing is so much more than just building a museum. It's really about restoring, you know, the warrior class of America and protecting that legacy. Joe Daniels, thank you for taking time with us today in Western New York. Appreciate it.
David, it's awesome to be on your show. I really appreciate the introduction. I hope my mom heard that.
Yeah, well, she needs to. Give me her number. I need to give her updates. Give her the Google alerts. I want to talk to you just about the old job at the 9/11 Memorial, because who would have thought after 9/11 that running, trying to create a museum could be controversial? But the winds changed. And in the mid-2000s, just it became very political, and a lot of forces, you know, all these different political factions started to show up. You have to navigate this and create something that is not only going to make people remember what happened on September 11th, but do it at the, you know, in the location, in the vicinity of where so many Americans died, and other people from across the world. Very difficult to undertake, and more difficult to accomplish and complete, which is what you did.
You know, it was extremely challenging, and I think at the heart of that challenge was really the emotional politics. I mean, even to this day, this stat is still crazy, but 40%, 1,100 families never got to go through that basic ritual of laying their loved ones to rest. They've had no human remains returned to them, and that's a pretty significant percentage. So when you talk about building on a site that's sacred, there is no more sacred site in the country than the World Trade Center site, and a lot of it had to be done so carefully because the emotions were really raw back then. They're still raw to some degree now, but it's been great to see the families come together, and, you know, whether they agreed with the design or not, on the 10th anniversary when they stepped onto the memorial and found their loved one's name forever enshrined on those parapets, they knew the country came together to do the right thing, and I think we're heartened by that.
Well, his name is Joe Daniels. He's the CEO of the National Medal of Honor Museum. The website that you want to go to contribute is mohmuseum.org. Already, people just like you have donated you know, whatever they could. It's up to $61 million. And, you know, we talk about all the political nature of a national election. You know, people are able to separate all of that and see exactly, you know, what this museum is going to represent. One of the things that you've been able to do besides you just revealed the design of this museum, which I've never seen anything like it. It's absolutely gorgeous. And but the thing that I'm brought back to Captain Charles Davis, who earned the Medal of Honor in 1943 in Guadalcanal with the Army, and his family has just essentially taken that Medal of Honor and put it in your custody at the museum. And one of the things that happened just recently was the German there was an auction in Germany, and they auctioned off a Spanish-American War Medal of Honor. And really the only pushback was from the Medal of Honor Museum, saying, you know, like Indiana Jones, it belongs in a museum. This isn't just a tchotchke that you put on your wall. It represents something. We're going to defend that award. We're going to defend American valor. That's an incredible legacy.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, your reference to Charles Davis's medal, it's so powerful. It was one of the few medals that were actually given in the field, and just looking at that medal, you could almost taste the salt air. You see the natural sort of deterioration that really embodies the history of what that medal represented. And these medals of honor are, in our 245-year history as a country, they represent the absolute best of who we are as a nation, and they should be treated as the sacred artifacts they are. They should and always be available for people to learn from, for people to interact with. And that's absolutely why, we in this country don't allow for sales of medals of honor. This museum is being built in trust for the American people, and we will be there every time to encourage people to do the right thing with these medals. And if they want to donate them to a museum so people can learn from them.
It's mohmuseum.org if you would like to make a donation. $61 million raised already from people just like you. Joe Daniels is the CEO. One of the things you talk about when you describe holding or seeing Captain Davis's Medal of Honor from 1943, you know, everyone talks about the virtual world we live in. You know, everyone's going to school now because of COVID, virtual. You're never going to get the experience of just seeing something on a screen as you do walking through the halls and seeing that this is not something that Iraq and Afghanistan, modern wars, Vietnam, Korea, the Medal of Honor since its inception, it represents something fundamentally good about the United States and Americans, what we fight for, who we are. And now in a polarized time, this is actually the most important thing I think that we could do as a nation, is to just bring young people around and learn the history of men and women just like them, a little bit older than them, but not barely, that chose their country above themselves.
Well, absolutely, David. And, you know, I think that there is just a hunger in this country for things that can unite us around what it means to be an American. I mean, there is no doubt, being in an election year and just the way the trend of this country has been going, that people are sick and tired of the hyper divisiveness. And the Medal of Honor, whether you're on the left or the right, whatever race, ethnicity, socioeconomic class, this is something that Americans can unite behind that is deeper than our division. So that fundraising number of more than $61 million, the thousands of small dollar donations that we've gotten, it's people want to be a part of something that they can be proud of. I mean, there is not that many national treasures that get built, and most of them haven't been in our lifetime or really old. So being a part of one that is being created right now in Arlington, and we're also going to build the first ever National Medal of Honor monument in our nation's capital, that's special to get involved in, and that's, I think, why we're seeing so much support.
You know, when we think about money, you know, there's $1.8 trillion. Everyone's, you know, the Fed is cutting checks left and right. We hear about military budgets. You don't really have an idea of how much money, $200 for the 9/11 memorial or the $61 that you've raised right now. And when you consider how many people write, you know, $1,000 checks, $200 checks, $50 checks, I mean, there are people that are giving to this right now. And when you take all of those donors, you know, it really speaks volumes, especially what you were able to accomplish with the Medal of Honor monument, which in a time where no Democrat and Republican can sit down and agree on anything, you actually have bipartisan support. It seems that as far left as you are, or as far right as you are, this is something that still transcends.
That's absolutely right. And we're just super heartened by the fact that just recently from the Republican side, we had Senator John Cornyn come together with Democrat Senator Tim Kaine to introduce our monument legislation in the Senate. And there really is bipartisan enthusiasm. I think people are grasping for and aspiring towards this very, very patriotic project, which says all of the right things about what this country is striving towards. No one, including the Medal of Honor recipients or veterans, you know, no one is saying that this country is perfect, but we do have a demonstrated path of understanding, acknowledging our flaws, working to make those flaws better, and building this institution that will inspire people to make the difficult choice when they're faced with, you know, hard choices. This is going to impact our country in the right way, and I think that's why there's so much enthusiasm behind it.
Now, why you, Joe Daniel, CEO of Medal of Honor, the National Medal of Honor Museum, mohmuseum.org is the website that you can donate. You have a law degree from Penn. You parachute into the 9/11 memorial, which becomes really, I mean, it was a circus. There were op-eds being written, the factions breaking off. No one was happy. You were able to get all of those people together. And just when that is completed and you raise a ton of money and you accomplish something that no one really was able to accomplish before you took this thing over, you then jump into, you know, the Medal of Honor Museum and you think, well, that won't be controversial. There were like 11 cities that wanted this thing. It ended up being Arlington, Texas, and great support out there. But everything is controversial today. There's nothing that is going to come easy. You could be doing a whole lot of things with a law degree from Penn. What about these types of projects motivate you to want to do it?
Well, you know, it really does all stem back for me to 9/11. I happened to be at the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001, and I got there between the first and second planes hitting the building and had this, like so many Americans, whether you saw it on TV or you were there, it was just a surreal, searing experience. And so a few years later, when they decided to put a group together to help stitch back this wound in the middle of New York City, you know, I raised my hand because I wanted to process the feelings I had. And mostly, at the time, they were anger. It was this feeling of how could they do this to us? And so getting involved with 9/11 and then becoming the president about 10 months after I joined as the general counsel, it was the privilege of a lifetime to be able to work with, you know, tens of thousands of 9/11 family members and just the entire country to do something that would make this country proud and honor the 2,977 people that were killed on that day at the Trade Center, at the Pentagon, and of course on Flight 93. And in so doing and telling their stories, when that project was done, I looked at the Medal of Honor project, and there are so many important similarities. I mean, the way the FDNY talks about we were just doing our jobs, what about the, you know, telling the stories of the guys who never came out? It's almost verbatim what I hear from Medal of Honor recipients about how do we share the stories. It's not a vanity project. They don't see it that way. This is a project for the public where the recipients are really giving us the privilege to let us tell their stories. And it just seemed like another chance to contribute to the country that I love so much.
Well, it is not a vanity project, but I do understand there's a $20 million Bellavia wing festooned with Buffalo chicken wings and Buffalo Bills memorabilia. I don't know if I can confirm that with you, but it's definitely no. But, you know, you bring up the point of them, the enemy, and 9/11 and how bitter 9/11 was to build a memorial that respects the fallen, but also acknowledges why we were having to deal with 9/11. You know, the Medal of Honor is almost the exact opposite emotion. It's about who we are as a country. It's about why we fight. And it's about the names that we'll never know. And if there isn't a place to go, no one's going to know Charles Davis. No one's going to know, you know, there's going to be a time when Audie Murphy's name is just, you know, he was a guy that served in World War II. And how young these men were and how absolute, they didn't even know, half of the time, they didn't even know where they were going. They didn't know where Korea was. Why are we at war with Korea? All of that politics, all that foreign policy, it goes away. It always comes down to Americans, black, white, gay, heterosexual, Catholic, Jewish, you name it. This is all one common bond that supersedes all of the division that we have in our country.
I mean, 100%. And I think that, you know, what we need to remember is that the United States, we've only been around for 245 years, and it's always been thought of this as a great experiment. We have no guarantees that this country is going to be around forever. And this sense that we can help reinforce the sense of personal responsibility that I or my neighbor or my loved one, we need to make sure that this experiment continues to thrive. That is a real thing. And when you hear these Medal of Honor stories and you read about Charles Davis or you read about David Bellavia, you understand that people are doing a lot and you can't just leave it for them to do that. Whether you serve or not, we all know we have opportunities in our daily lives where we're, you know, either making the hard right choice or making the easy wrong choice. And this museum will inspire those to make the right choice.
And especially when you're talking about something that's brick and mortar where young people can go to and see that, you know, in person. It's an experience that, you know, you look at especially the World War II generation, the Korean War generation. Every generation is different. Every generation's asked to do something for this country. And, you know, we look at our first responders and we do, I think, a much better job of appreciating valor today and people are out there risking their lives. But it is also, there's that generation of Vietnam veteran that really never got any thank you, any celebratory. Gary Biker, who lives right here in Western New York. I grew up, he was, you know, the biggest thing in my life as far as he was the military. But that generation never got a thank you, God bless you, I appreciate you. And this museum, there's some wounds that need to be healed for other generations too. And the Medal of Honor, MOHmuseum.org, it's looking to heal some of those for the Vietnam guys.
Absolutely. And I just want to tell your listeners, I mean, when I first heard you speak about this, you were up on stage, I think it was in the Arlington area about maybe a year or so ago. And the way you talked about this Vietnam generation not getting their appropriate acknowledgement and thank you, I mean, you could tell, you look across the crowd in that ballroom, it is so deeply appreciated by those guys to hear someone who is a Medal of Honor recipient turn that thank you around and pass it on to that generation, to that lost, you know, generation. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I think partly through the inspiration of what you've been talking about, this museum will absolutely recognize that when it comes down to the individuals, the individual units, what was sacrificed, that generation does deserve it. It's just thank you, and it will happen in this museum.
Well, we've got four people on the text board already gone to mohmuseum.org to donate money. Joe Daniels is the CEO. You know, it opens in 2024 in Arlington, Texas. And, you know, with your leadership and the way you can wrangle cats, I've never seen anything like it. You're constantly focusing people on the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is that this is not about individuals. It's not about glory. It's really about the fundamental strand that connects all of us, is that we live we're blessed to live in this country. But what America stands for, this is not about 2024 opening. This is about 2324. This is about having a place where every American can go to realize it's still worth it. We're still the best because we're willing to bleed and die for an experiment that the world has never seen before.
That's right. And I would just say that the other reason I wanted to do this project and get involved is that when I was at the 9/11 memorial, you know, I was lucky to have these incredible visits from people all over the world. I met a couple popes, the Queen of England, bunch of people. But the visits that mattered most is that when you had guys who were deployed and they returned home, or they signed up because of seeing the towers fall on that day, and they came back to come visit the memorial. And it was such a reinforcing thing that these young men and women were putting themselves in harm's way. And at stateside, we had built this memorial to honor those that had been killed in the attacks that motivated this service. So I think that we need to, and we have gotten better as a country as far as acknowledging those that give of themselves, but we can do a lot better job. And this museum, this National Medal of Honor Museum, will be a home to acknowledge the service that people give across the board. And just being a part of it, I think, is really, really special, which is why, you know, I appreciate you encouraging people to go to the website, mohmuseum.org, because when we do open and the eyes of the world are on this museum and we have every living president, every living Medal of Honor recipient there, and we open our doors, knowing that you gave $5, $10, $15, whatever it is, and we're a part of it, that's going to be a real huge point of pride.
Joe Daniels is the CEO of the National Medal of Honor Museum, opening in 2024, already raised $61 million from people just like you going to mohmuseum.org, and it's something that we all are, it's not a donation, it's really an investment. It's an investment in what this country stands for. You just heard why Joe Daniels is the CEO. This guy is incredibly gifted, and we're so blessed to have you running this thing, organizing this thing, but more importantly, constantly reminding us why we're doing it. And Joe, I give you a tremendous amount of respect. Thank you so much for your time.
I really appreciate it, David. I'm so glad to be able to work with you. It was great being on the show today.
All right. That's Joe Daniels, CEO. Go to mohmuseum.org and invest in what this country is all about. He's a great guy and always getting himself into things that people are agitated and upset about. Why is this happening? And Joe just talks to him for 5 minutes and he's like, listen, why are we here? What are we doing? It's not about anything. It's about our country. It's about America. That's why we're here. Love that guy. He's a wonderful human being and a great leader at what he does. Pen degree aside, he's a wonderful. No, thank you, Joe Daniels, for your time. MOHmuseum.org. Give what you can. We always appreciate that. We'll be back with more of the program right after this brief message.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.